welcome to Revolución, a Hispanic Heritage Month 2022 virtual event. I am your host, Rafael, a.k.a. The Latin Babbler. And our guest today is a writer, director, entrepreneur, a digital storyteller. He's a former writer-producer for BuzzFeed's Latinx digital brand, Pero Like, and is founder and CEO of production company Hype Media House and social media brand coaching program Self Hype. Welcome to the show, Eli Vasquez.
Hey, man, that was the cleanest intro I've ever had, I think, ever. Like, I have so many slashes, and you just, that was the smoothest, like, I'm going to hire you from now on just to do the intros.
We'll do intros for all the production stuff, all the movie intros. I don't have movie voice. I got more like cartoon voice, but it'll still work.
I love it. Happy to be here, man.
Yeah. It's great to have you. We're going to have a great discussion, especially, you know, Hispanic Heritage Month. We're trying to represent. One of those representations is you're a proud Afro-Mexican or Afro-Mexican, to be specific. That's right. I love the diversity than just even saying that. It's so good.
I know. It's funny. Like, my family is, it's a very Midwestern thing to be Mexican and Puerto Rican. Usually East Coast Puerto Rican, West Coast Mexican, Midwest, makes sense that, you know, we got the
East Coast right behind you, right there.
Yeah, Puerto Rican, I see Dominican. that makes sense for East Coast mix. That makes sense. I love it.
So very cool. I have a question because I was on your LinkedIn and you gotta shed some light on this. So you're the oldest of 10 siblings, and we'll get into that.
According
to your LinkedIn profile, it says you lived or grew up in a haunted house in Hood Deep in Chicago and let your mom down because you didn't become a priest. Is that a joke on your LinkedIn profile, or is that like factual?
I think you're making me realize I really need to update my LinkedIn profile. Like, I was like, do I really have that on my the most professional app you could have? It's all true. Yeah, I always tell people, like, you know, I get my comedy from my family being the oldest of 10, but also in my childhood, growing up in the hood, you know, I had like gang member, like neighbors that their house was getting shot up on Tuesday. And then I had a ghost in my house that would be moving shit and turning the TV off and on Wednesday. So I was like dodging bullets and ghouls like left and right while dealing with a bunch of crazy siblings. And on top of that, my mom, when I got baptized as a kid, the priest held me up Lion King style to the church and announced that my destiny was to be a priest. And I swear one tear went down my mom's eye because she thought that was like my destiny. So now I'm a filmmaker. So now she thinks I'm going to be like the Latino Tyler Perry and make like Jesus based movies and like, you know, change the game that way. But after my last film, I don't know. I think she may have given up hope. We'll see. Yeah.
That is crazy. I actually thought, I thought maybe it was a joke. I was like, the way he has it up there, it may have been like satire or something like that. That's crazy though.
Yeah. It's pretty wild, dude. I know it sucked. Like I want to tell like a movie just like of like ghosts in the hood. You always see ghosts of like our
ghosts
white
in the
people.
Hood. That's a good title for it.
It's like brown people are ghosts. Like Latinos are the most like spookiest culture ever. Like we got our grandmas like knocking stuff over, the evil eye, like all like they're around us always. So it's like
in Mar de Ojo.
Right. We need to diversify the afterlife. You know what I'm saying? You know, that's you gotta get some representation there. You know. So.
All right. So I got to ask you, because I had mentioned the 10 siblings. What was it like growing up with that many siblings in a household?
Dude, it sucked. I mean, it was like I was the only child until I was like six. And that was sweet. You know, like my parents had me when they were like teenagers. So my dad was 17. My mom was 19. So that means my grandparents were in their 40s and their hips worked good and they had energy. And they just showered me with gifts. And then the kids started popping off like crazy because my mom was really religious. She found Jesus. And, you know, the first thing your Latino neighborhood priest is going to tell you is, you know, any sort of anti-baby is bad. It's a sin. So my mom took that to heart and kids were popping out maybe two or three times a year somehow. I couldn't keep up. It was just ba 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 ba. And then I became the oldest of 10. So Christmases and all that turned to like me with just the
gift card. That had to be you're just getting sock.
Fighting over hamburger helper, you know, it's just like it's hard out here, man. But that was the life.
Yeah. That is crazy, bro. That is insane. I can't even imagine it. Like, I have one brother, and it was tough for my mom. She was a single mom. So I can't imagine what it's like to have, like, nine other siblings that you guys turned around and was, like, having around. Dude. Just in – how big was this house, first of all?
It wasn't big. We're in a haunted house in the hood. I was like, my mom needed so much help, she probably, like, asked the gangbanger members, like, hey, can you watch, like – Eli for a little bit, you know, he'll roll some joints or something, you know, just like, I just need some help, you know. But nah, it was crazy because, yeah, I was the oldest. So that means I was the third parent. So I was changing diapers. Yeah. I was babysitting. I was like doing all that crap. I mean, I remember I dislocated my knee in like wrestling and I came back and I could only like hop on one leg. My knee was literally out of place. And there's stairs that go up to the kitchen. And I get there and I'm like on crutches and my mom's like, yo, go do the dishes. And it's on the second floor up the stairs. I'm like, mom, I can't walk. I'm on one knee. Or like, yeah, well, I don't know. Figure it out. The dishes need to get washed. It'll just like. And now my siblings are all soft and they don't wash anything or clean anything. And I was just back home.
They got spoiled. They got spoiled. As the family progressed, they all turned around and benefited from the process, so to speak.
Dude, seriously, they get to go to Disney World now. I had to watch the VHS tapes that, like, if you were going, they would send you something in the mail, be like, oh, this is, get ready for your Disney trip. And it's all these white families all happy. I wasn't going, but that's all they had. So they just gave me the DVD and I would watch it over and over again, like pretending I was there in that white
family. I know what that's like, though. I didn't get to go to Disney until like I was 43, I think is what it was. That was the first time I had gone to Disney. So for me, I was like a little kid. Sitting there, dang. You know, just like, bro, and I took my old, you know, my old ass kids that they were all like 20 and something. We didn't get to go to Disney either when they were younger. So it was just like it was like three kids all over the age of 20 and 40 having fun in Small World.
That's amazing. I love that. But that good on you, man, because that's like an achievement. You know what I mean? Like you hustled. So you get to take your kids, you know, even though they're like 25, probably getting drunk at, you know, or whatever. But, you know, they got to experience it. That's really dope, man. Congrats on that. Yeah,
you know. It was funny watching them on the Dumbo ride. They're all a bunch of, just like, I couldn't get on it. That ride would just fall apart if I sat on that shit. So, all right. So amazing career going into the film industry. Like at what age did you start having thoughts about pursuing that specific field?
Yeah, dude, I'm really lucky because, like, you know, I everyone's on their own timeline. First off, like, I was blessed enough to know exactly what I wanted to do at like 18. Like, I was a super shy kid, didn't have any friends. Actually, got punched in the face over an iPod in that hood ass school I was going to, and my mom was like, we're getting the heck out of there. I lived the Fresh Prince life. I got one little fight. My mom got scared and we're moving out of the hood. We're going to like the nice area and all that. And from there, they had a TV class, but I was too scared to go. And what really pushed me was, you know, we always hear that life is short, but we don't really get it until we experience it. And my sister at the time, she was 7 years old. She got diagnosed with a rare form of leukemia. And that was actually the first time we got to go to Disney because that was, you know, give kids the world, make a wish, all that. Thank God she beat it. She's 18 now. She's an asshole, slams doors, teenager, cusses, all that. We love her for it. We love her for it. But at the time, I was like, holy crap, life is short. I just got to go for it. Because I was always artsy. So I remember I took the class and my life changed forever. I was in my mom's garage. We shot a music video cover for Check It Out by Beastie Boys. But the concept was me and my two friends were Ghostbusters and we had to answer a call of a ghost in a girl's garage. So we went to Goodwill. We got the full suits. We broke up a bunch of old Xboxes and PlayStations and like put together the backpacks. And then my mom's vacuum cleaner tubes and we stuffed it with fireworks. So we would shoot it like we're Ghostbusters and we're running around.
Goodness.
Yeah. We're like downtown, small town Indiana, just like,
you know, you could have just gotten yourself some Roman candles. Like,
yeah, but we put the Roman candles in the tube. So it looked like we were shooting. And yeah, so it was a good old time, but I was so stressed out. But I was like at 18, I was like, at 17, I was like, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. So after that, I went to film school. And yeah, I just really busted my ass and I got the opportunity of BuzzFeed like 6 months out of college. So I was really blessed out of that as well. So.
Yeah, that's crazy. So, I mean, you had to come from Chicago to LA, right? In order to be able to take that?
Yeah, yeah. So everyone listening, if you don't know or if you think it's going to hurt your chances, just lie. your best bet is just to lie and just say sure. Because they were like, hey, you live in LA? I'm like, yes. I had a whole apartment in Chicago. I was not living in LA at all. They were like, yeah, you live in LA, right? I flew there to do the interview, and I just said I lived there, and I used the fake address. And then they're like, okay, great. And then they called me like 2 weeks later. They're like, hey, can you start in a week? And I'm like, yes. And I was in Chicago. I was like, yeah, I'll be there. So, yeah, I, like, sold everything. My mom had a pizza party celebrating. I found someone to take my apartment. I just dipped off in a suitcase.
Their response would have been by mail? And that fake-ass address was where they were sending that.
Maybe. There's some guy that has, like, an acceptance letter and a BuzzFeed sweater. I don't know. Don't know about.
He's got the welcome pack.
Yeah, he has the welcome pack. And he's like, why? I keep getting mugs and stuff and corgi sweatshirts and all that. But, yeah, no.
So what was your experience like at BuzzFeed or, you know, Pedro Like?
Yeah, man. I mean, well, when I started, it was before Pedro Like even existed. So it took a lot of amazing dope ass people like Jenny Lorenzo, Curly Velasquez, a lot of like amazing human beings. And I'm sorry, I can't think of everyone's names right this minute, but they really busted their asses to force BuzzFeed to be like, yo, this is something that's real. This is something that's dope. This was back when like, Even if you said, yo, there's going to be a digital channel for Latinos that is bilingual and American Latino content, like that just, it wasn't there before.
It wasn't a thing.
Yeah. It wasn't a thing. And then Remezcla popped off and Me Too popped off and then Better Like was in the mix. So I watched the growth from afar and I did original BuzzFeed content for the first couple of years and I learned so much. It was dope. And I learned the power of social digital content because at the time I was a film student. I just wanted to make movies. So I didn't really take it seriously. It was just like a job and I was going to have student loans. But I really learned the power of social and digital video and content. And then from there, I got to join the Better Like team where at first I didn't feel like I belonged. You know, it was struggle because I can't speak Spanish. I can't dance for shit. And, you know,
Has that changed since then?
A little bit. But yeah, it was just like, I didn't feel like I fit. And especially being Afro-Latino, and this was before you were even saying the word, I didn't really knew where I fit in the mix. I was third generation. And I just felt off. So it took a lot of like self-love and personal development on my end to be like, oh no, being Latino is not something you try to be. It's just who you are. And your experience.
It's a party. Valid, like that, right? That's literally what you are. So
yeah, exactly. So I started making content on just that. I'm not feeling Latino enough and not feeling accepted, being third gen. And the content blew up. It was great because other people were like, yo, I fucks with this.
I can relate with that. Yeah.
Yeah, I could relate with it. And then I was able to join the team. And dude, they were amazing. You got to think, you have this whole table of Dominicans, Mexicans, Puerto Ricans, Salvadorians, from all walks of life, all loud as hell in a tech company full of white people. It's the best. Like we were the party table, you know, and it was a beautiful experience. And I love every one of them. And we're still homies to this day. And I love Better Like. It was a beautiful institution that helped me get to that next level. So.
So you, cause we're talking about the next level now that you've been doing producing and, you know, doing a lot of the film producing there. Is that what encouraged you like to go back into, you know, I'm going to use now the film side and start creating that?
Yeah. Yeah. So the goal was always to be a director, a writer, a director. That never went away. I think I got distracted with the digital content. I wanted to make sure I was doing a good job. I wanted to make sure I got it and then get back on the film train. And I knew Better Like would be a good resource because Latino Hollywood is very small and everyone knows everyone. And I knew there would be a good way to also like meet people and they could see my work. And so I was able to make that transition and do that. And also every chance I had, I would make something that was scripted. I would make something that feels and looks cinematic because that was my style. That's who I was. And so that never went away. And then as the last couple of years went towards the end of Better Like, I really, again, realized life was short and I had to go hard in the paint with this film stuff because you got to be committed. And I was able to build my coaching program. I was able to build other things that I really loved. But that film thing is like, man, I have to fill this. So
it's still grabbing you, man. Yeah, exactly. It's one of those things like when you got a passion, I don't think a lot of people understand that. When you got a passion for something, man, it just swallows you.
Exactly. 100%. You get it. Like it's like eating. It's like breathing. It's like,
yeah,
I don't care.
Like, if you're not doing it, you're miserable about it, man. Like, it's just, exactly. I don't know. Just like you have like this emptiness inside. Exactly. Like, if you feel like you're being pulled to do it. And if you don't do it, you're just not happy until you actually do.
Exactly. And that's what I tell people too, man. You get it. Like, you're in the game with me where it's like, if you are living on a floor and there's not, you're making a dime, but you get to act or you get to make something and that fulfills you. That's how you know this is for you, because it's insane to do this stuff. It's insane to be creative in general. You have to do it. You need to do it. You know, it's not like, oh, I want to get some clout and whatever. And it's like, there's no way you're going to stay.
Were your parents very supportive of it? I always ask this question to everybody, because this field is so rare for Latinos. Like, so like, were your parents jumping on when you first started and everything, or?
Hell no, no, no. My mom, no, she, you know, I think my mom was more safe. Like, she, like, just like a lot of the Latino moms, she's like, yo, doctor, lawyer, priest.
Yeah. Everybody who answers the same question answers the exact same thing. Lawyers, doctors, things like that.
Exactly. And at first, when you're younger, you're frustrated and you're angry and you want that support. And then later in life, mm-hmm. where you kind of get perspective, it's like, I get it. You know, it's like safety. You just want your kid to be safe. My dad, on the other hand, was very much like, go for it, go for it, go for it. He's like, dude, just go to LA, just figure it out, just see what happens. So he was a big push on me on the later end of my life to just go for it. So it was nice to have that. And then once they start seeing that you're doing well and they have something to brag about, that's when they start.
I was the opposite though. I have all my kids are creative. So my daughter is here in LA. She's a micro influencer / actress, and she does her thing. She does really well. She was actually going for a psychology degree. And I went up to her one time. She was on stage. She was doing a rendition. She was actually playing Fiona on her college campus for Shrek the Musical. And I pulled her aside that night, and I'm like, are you sure this is where you want to be? Because, I mean, you look the happiest whenever you're, like, on that stage. I'm like, you should probably be doing this for the rest of your life if you feel that that's what you should be doing. You know, and then my other daughter's a painter. So, I mean, I've been kind of pushing the arts because it's like they have a passion for it. Like, this is what they want to do. So, for me, like, who am I to, you know, push them towards a way that they're not going to be receptive of? You know, it's safe, like you're saying, but for me, it was like, you can see it in their eyes when they're like shining over something. And I just think, like, you know, it's important to kind of support that.
Dude, that's beautiful, man. And you have no idea the impact you're making, like, because I wish I had that. And I think it's a disservice to have that friction or resistance towards your kids if this is something they want to do. If you just propel them and push them forward to give them the best effort, even if they fail and it's not for them, it's okay. They'll find something else that they'll like enjoy or like. But I've seen kids or even people in their careers that had that support really early on, and it's a world of difference. And it's this wall that you have to go through that, you know, am I allowed to be here? Should I be here? But with your support, they were able to just go right through those walls. And that's amazing.
Yeah. And I knew that, look, I knew those were going to be tough fields. There's a lot of talk about the starving artist and the, you know, the starving actor and the actor that has 16 jobs and stuff like that. And is getting through. And what I told them is like, look, if you're going to do these type of fields, you just got to give it 130%, regardless of what result you're getting in the beginning. You just got to keep grinding, because it's one of those fields where longevity and consistency is going to be what propels you through this thing. So it's, you know, and they've wildly successful in it. And everybody who I know who's really passionate about what they do in this field, wildly successful. Like, they just, they're kind of like, look, yourself. I mean, look, we're talking about you left, but like you're now the gift is shining through to 2018. You become a fellow for the Hola Mexico Film Festival and Tomorrow's Filmmakers Today program. And then in 2021, NHMC, what is it, screenwriting fellow?
Yeah.
And then the most recently, which is where I met you, you were at La LIF, so the Los Angeles Latino International Film Festival, where they created an Afro-Latinx, you know, film inclusion, which is like really cool. And that's where your film Bodies Will Tumble and Roll, it's like a finalist, or they were one of the finalists on that. So What was your, like, what was your experience with, to find that out? Like, when they reached out and they were like, hey, by the way, this film is in, it's going to be one of the finalists. Like, you know, walk me through that.
Man. I mean, oh, first off, I want to say, like, everyone that's listening, like, of the culture, like, the time is now. I know we're nowhere near we need to be, but this is the best time to be a creative of color because there are so many programs, more than ever. The fact that there's an Afro-Latino program, anything that exists, is so validating to who we are, and we're at the frontier. We have a lot of, we have a lot more ways to go, but we're at the best frontier right now. So, like, I tell everyone, it's free to apply to these programs. Anyone could do it. So, like, don't be afraid to jump in because, so when I got the, so per your question, I applied the year before with an idea I had in, like, college, and I didn't make it. I was a finalist, but it was, it made such an impact on the head of the program that he got lunch with me, and he's like, don't stop. I love this idea. Let me know how I could support it. And I was like, dude, if this idea from college could go this far and make this a much of an impression, like, I have even better stuff now. So I made a film, Quinte to Infinity, that year that I didn't get it. And then I applied again with another idea with Bodies Will Tumble and Roll. And then I remember I was at my mom's birthday in Florida. We're all getting drunk off tequila. And I was like, I'm a digital nomad. All the work I do online is online. So I was like, okay, I'm going to be out of the country for like 6 months. I'm going to be in Latin America, get better at dancing, and then my Spanish. I'll be in Latin America for like 6 months, and I'll just focus on that, and I'll write and do all that. And then I got the email, and I'm all turned up at a cantina somewhere. I was just like, oh my God. I was like, I ran to the bathroom. I sat on the toilet, hyperventilated. Then I walked out and told my whole family, I got it. They're like, woo, let's celebrate. But like, as a filmmaker, I have to make a movie in 6 months. All I have is just an idea on a sheet. So I'm freaking out. Like, my buzz went completely down. So she's there. Everyone's like, relax, Eli, relax. I'm like, yeah, okay, sure. And then right when we got back, the first call I made was Lauren Nichols, my producer. I was like, dude, we got it. And she's Afro Latina, amazing producer. And I was like, let's do this. She's like, hell yeah, let's make it happen. I just need to feel somewhat secure that we have a plan. And yeah, we wrote the script, and we had mentors all the way throughout the process. And Lalif was amazing. It gave us $20,000. We were able to premiere at the Chinese Theater, sold out crowd. And yeah, worked with amazing human beings, Chelsea Rendon. And yeah, it was an insane, wild experience that I absolutely loved. The end product and seeing the Chinese Theater filled with us and just shouting and laughing and supporting is beautiful.
Yeah, insane. Lalif was insane for me. So, I mean, it was my first time being at a festival at all. Like,
really?
Well, this is the first time I'm doing hosting at all. I'm a computer geek. I've literally spent my entire life designing websites, doing all kinds of digital artwork and this and that. No, I'm not kidding. And the only reason I'm here is because of a dare that a cousin made to me 2 years ago when the pandemic was starting, because she knows that I can't shut the hell up. And she was like, you would be really good at a podcast. Why don't we just create one as a family, as you know, to kind of like break the time of the pandemic. And I fell in love with it. I was just like, nope, I got to do this for the rest of my life. This is what I'm going to do. If it's not on radio, it'll be my own digital version of it.
I love it.
You know, I didn't realize we would create a whole ass media company out of it. But, you know, aside from that, it was one of the best experiences, or this has been one of the best experiences in my life. And when I went to Lalif, it was like double down, so to speak, because I went on the year that they included, you know, the indigenous inclusion, the Afro-Latino inclusion. They had, I think it was like 50% of all the creators that were there were women this year. And so I was like, I was on cloud nine. I mean, we were doing interviews. Sylvia was the one that did the interview with you from that program. I mean, we just had a blast. Don't get me wrong. It was stressful and it was long because we were there from morning to night. But just to see, to quote the title of, you know, one of my friends who has a great song, it's like, All the Pretty Colors is literally the way I can describe the way Lalif was. And it was every single representation that you can possibly think of. And for me, I was like, man, when we get to Hispanic Heritage Month, I want to do that. Like, I want to have a virtual version of that. I want to put up panels that talk about all the different types of inclusion, all the different types of discussions from the Latino community. Like for me, it was such a big deal to kind of emulate what they had started at that festival. Cause like all the other festivals I heard of were just, you know, I just went to a festival with my daughter where she was in a short and it was just the complete opposite. You know, it was, there was barely any Latinos there. She was one of the few, you know what I'm saying? So for me, La Leaf was kind of like, it felt like home. Yeah. If I could say that in the best way. It's so crazy. You were talking about the numbers. I'm gonna spew numbers. I love doing this. You know, people are gonna be bored. So I'm looking at stats. We use the Latino Data Collaborative. They provide some of the best stats ever. We make up 19% of the population here in the United States. And yet for whatever reason, we're 2.9% of the show leads, 5% of movie leads, 2.5% of all directors, 4.5% of writers. I'm spitting these out the best way I can.
Wow.
And then when we go through the Afro-Latinos, which is something that you're very, very vocal about, only 6 Afro-Latinos worked as leads or co-leads across a 13-year time frame. I want people to think about that considering how many of the movies have been out where we've even had, you know, movies that descend, you know, make us look like terrible, where we're the gangs and mafias and this and that. Only 6% or only 6, not 6%, 6 overall Afro-Latinos have been leads or co-leads in a 13-year time frame. When I give you those numbers, Eli, what goes through your head?
I mean, I'm not surprised. Unfortunately, it's the disappointing, figured kind of, you know what I mean? Like it's, especially Afro-Latino. Cause I've been like watching movies forever since I was a kid.
Yeah.
So I remember when our main representation was like Antonio Banderas.
And exactly.
Like, and he's like from Spain.
He's Spanish. Know?
It's like our representation was like 2 people from Spain for like 20 years. You know what I mean? So I'm like, I'm not surprised because it's like they care that little to be authentic. You know what I mean? I'm like, oh, he speaks Spanish, whatever. Stop complaining. Just put him in here. But it's I think what excites me is the next 10 years. And it's like, unfortunately, you know, you have to kind of play the long game with this stuff. But fortunately, we live in the digital age where certain issues and conversations are pushed way more in the forefront because individuals have more power of the narrative than in the past, because there was very small sources of information and it was very controlled. So now there's this collective conversation happening that is pushing these narratives and pushing this social pressure with studios, with all that. And I am optimistic and excited, but unfortunately not surprised of the past. But I want to see this data in the next 5 years and to see if there's an actual change. I've talked to a people that are a little above me that's working in the rooms that are doing the things, and they do verbalize that they do, that this is a concern, and they do feel that this is a door that's opening way faster than it's ever been done before. So I, for everyone listening, you know, there is opportunity to be had. Let's keep pushing that door open, you know?
So based on what you're hearing, though, you're kind of hearing that we're starting to see the change, like we're going towards an upward trend. Obviously, it's not going to be overnight. We're not just going to start taking over movies overnight, but at least in a way that's in a faster pace than us waiting for the next West Side Story, you know, you know, waiting for us to be able to kind of like represent our culture where like the entire cast isn't somebody else playing Latinos.
Exactly. I think we are more immediately moving away from the world of white people playing us. You know, that Twitter will burn the film to the ground. We know that that is not going to be held accountable. And the Latino power is way more vocal than ever, you know, because
very
of
much
the digital
so.
Age.
Yeah.
You know, I remember like in the 90s to early 2010s that like the left, it was like white, black, and then Latino, and then they're kind of like everybody else. Like there's like their vocal power wasn't
and
as
we
strong.
Were compartmentalized. We were like the roles were very precise to the maid, the butler, the
right,
you know,
right.
The this and that, the you know, the drug dealer, all that stuff.
Right, right. So it's like they were able to get away of not having to listen to us, and now they have to. because now everyone cares. The beauty of now is that we have white guilt. We have white women very concerned about people of color. The amount of times I had conversations and I felt like an animal that was extinct. It's a little bit of an eye roll, but I'll take it. Okay, I'll take all the white guilt smoke if that means pushing us forward, because we need everyone to care. Not just
that's
us.
A good way to put it, though, like, because it does feel like nobody knew we were here. Like, all of a sudden, we, you know, we all rose up like cabbage from the fields and just all of a sudden started walking in place. Like, no, like we've been here this whole time. Like, what, you know, it's everybody else who's kept us from being able to do that. That's crazy. So yeah, tell me about Bodies Will Tumble and Roll. Tell me a little bit about the film.
Yeah, well, the film is a short comedy horror thriller. It's about inner city black and brown cheer squad. They're super dysfunctional. And the coach says enough is enough. And they take them to a cabin in the woods to sort out their issues. And all hell breaks loose when the coach goes missing. And the team needs to learn to come together to save her from serial killers in the woods. So it's your classic American horror story flipped on its head. And I always thought it was dope. Like, I always say this movie is like Bring It On meets a Tropic Thunder into one. And,
that's a good collide. That's a good collide right there.
Yeah, with the tone of Shaun of the Dead. So I wanted to really have fun with this genre, this classic American genre, really diversify it. But it's really fun on paper. But what it really dives into is the interpersonal conversations and coming together in the Latino community, where it's the main characters that are butting heads is a light-skinned Mexican with straight hair and an Afro-Puerto Rican with really curly hair. And these are teenage girls bumping heads. We have a girl that's insecure because of her identity and doesn't speak Spanish. We have a white girl who thinks she's Latino, but she's not. So it's like all these different diaspora of the community, and really with the lesson of, in order to make change and get things done, we all have to come together. No matter who you are, what we are, where we come from, what color you are, what generation we are all Latino AX. And that's really the message I was trying. That is a part of that film, that you get that sisterhood and that community working together.
How's it going trying to get it mainstream? I mean, are you able to, you know, once they get out of the festivals, you think it's something we'll see, you know, at AMCs?
Oh man, that's the goal, right? My goal with this thing was, like, I knew my film was going to be different, and I'm the oldest of 10. Majority of them are little sisters. Like, I like to make dope films that are fun, that you're going to see like the trailer and be like, oh shit, we got to go see that. It's crazy. And then you're going to get something out of it. You're going to get a deeper message out of it, you know? So I want to entertain my little sisters in the Midwest that are going to go see it, see themselves, but also learn about themselves a little bit too. So I knew that film was going to be different. My goal with the process was, one, I wanted to make people laugh, escape from the reality of the world. We're talking about colorism, but in a comedy, to give that escapism. And then, two, I wanted people to say, I want more. So if there was, and the two things I was able to accomplish was people were laughing their ass off. And people
were definitely laughing their ass off.
and people want more. They want more. And that's the excitement I want. So the beauty of this La Live program is that it puts you in rooms that you probably wouldn't have if you didn't have the opportunity. So I'm meeting with managers, I'm meeting with agents, I'm meeting with people that are like, do you have a feature of script of this? Do you have an outline of this? And so that's really the mission, is to use this as a proof of concept to get the green light to make that feature.
Yo, so Netflix, pick this shit up. This should be a series. This should be a series. And I don't mean the one that you cancel after one season, bro.
Unfortunate trend of that. Yeah, definitely. So,
also, by the way, Regency and all the other theaters, it's not that I have anything against you guys. It's just AMC, you know, has seats that are fat people friendly. So
they should really market that. You need to tweet at them.
I told them, hey, you got, you know, I got the whole premiere and everything just because you make me feel right. You know, I sit back, I recline, I don't have to worry about, you know, the spacing and all kinds of stuff. So You had mentioned another film. What is it? Quince Till Infinity. What was that? Yeah. What was that film about?
So, yeah, that's a movie I self-funded and produced last year, wrote and directed. And with the timing, I was literally in post-production with Bodies Will Tumble and Roll and Quince Till Infinity at the same time. So actually, I have two films in the festival circuit right now. So with Quince Till Infinity, it's very much a love letter to my 15-year-old self who was forced to stand up in quinceañeras. And I was a big dweeb. I love punk rock music. I hated, like, I would have to go to these quintes that it was all these hood ass smooth talking guys that were trying to holler and hook up with the girls. And I was the dweeby nerdy guy that was all shy and quiet, just
the,
like,
corner guy.
Yeah, I wanted to smoke weed and, like, listen to punk rock. So I wanted to tell a story about two rebellious teens that steal a car and escape a quinceañera. And it's just a really love letter to, like, teenage angst. You know, it's just two kids are just living life while their family is chasing them down and trying to, like, catch them. So, yeah, it's very, like, music, very punk rock, very fun. There's this show on Netflix called End of the Fucking World where these two teens.
I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember
that. So okay. I say it's like a Latino East LA, like, End of the Fucking World. Yeah. So it's a good time. It's a really good time. We had
very cool. Very cool. So, you started now, what is it? Hype Media Productions, which is what's doing a lot of these films. And then we mentioned that you were doing the social media brand coaching, through a program called Self Hype. What inspired you to start that? And can you tell us a little bit about the Self Hype program?
Yeah. Thanks for asking. So Hype Media House, is all the films I'm making under my banner. We also do, digital content for different brands and things like that. So I'm all about building a legacy. I'm all about, like, branding. I'm all about, you know, making, like, what Jay-Z says, I'm not a businessman. I'm a businessman. And I always felt that. And I wanted to embody that. So, like, Hype Media House started when I was just making movies, but it's going to grow into something bigger, right?
Like a production. Yeah. Like
production company. It's going to grow with me. And same thing with the coaching program, where this was a love sort of like podcasting for you later in life that I discovered, which was, I hit a low like 4 or 5 years ago, maybe longer now, where I felt stuck. I felt lost. I felt not happy. I'd be making viral videos every week, but personally, I just was not in a good place. And I had a panic attack, and I knew I had to make a change. And so I dove into personal development. I dove into coaching. I dove into mental health. I dove into therapy, something I never saw before. And I completely fell in love with it. And I started documenting my process. And a lot of people saw, wow, this man of color is vocalizing these things, sharing his perspective on these things. And people were like, this isn't like self-help. This is like more inclusive. This is more like of the culture. So like self-hype. And so I started adopting that. And I completely dove in for like years, and someone brought up like, you should start a program, just like 8-week online, help people just get out of that funk, because I was able to.
Oh, that's from, very cool.
Yeah. So I was able to go from that low of my life to getting to the point where I completely loved myself, dove into all my ventures, traveled the world, eventually quit my job, be my own boss and do all, but love myself in the process. So, pretty much I was able to create the program in 2019. And it has been the most beautiful experience ever. Like we have a whole community from people from Europe to the Philippines, from the coast to coast, the States, all over the world that have jumped in, quit their jobs, launched new careers, discovered their passions, lost 40, 50 pounds. Like, it has been such a beautiful experience, and it is right there next to filmmaking. And those are two things I'll do to the day I die, to help people on that personal level. And if you follow me on social, that's all I really focus on. Because if I'm going to be on social, I'm going to do that.
I follow your account. You happy as hell all the time on that. And look, obviously it's social media. We all go through struggles and things like that.
Yeah.
But the message that's coming out of like your Instagram, when I'm sitting there, you know, I wake up in the morning, the first thing I see is you giving some type of motivational type message. No, it's like really cool, because there's a lot of people who need that. Like, you wake up in the morning, sometimes you just like, I don't want to do this day. I don't want to, you know, go and do that. And then, you know, you're getting on social media, and the first thing you see is like an Eli motivational message. You're like, yeah, all right, I'm gonna go and do this shit.
Yeah, hell yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But what's up with your TikTok? You give love advice on TikTok?
Man, you do your research, man. You see, this is why you're good. This is why you're good, because you got all the technical research background, and now you're in front of the camera as a host, so you're a dangerous combination. Because
I didn't dive into the personal aspect of your life, but you know the stuff that I can't see.
No, you're good, man. That's what I'm doing on TikTok. So, dude, it was so random. Because it was towards the tail end of my Betolite career. And Maya Murillo, who's phenomenal.
So oh, love her.
Dude, she's
love
been
her.
In the game since she was 16. She's helped I me met out her at so Aleve. Many ways.
I have the best picture on her. It's on my Instagram account. I have the best picture of her.
Oh, she's amazing. Yeah,
it's so good. They're so much fun.
She's a genius. She's a genius in the digital game. I learned so much from her. But she was like, y'all, we have to switch to TikTok. And I'm like, dude, that's how I know I was getting old. I'm like, man, I don't want to get on another
app. I don't want to do this.
My knees hurt. I don't want to, like, it's hard enough with this IG. You know, my digital knees were hurting. So I was like, no. And then I was on a date, and she was, like, super late. And I was just sitting there bored. And I have a lot of friends that are girls. And they always lean on me with advice because I give like a male perspective. You know, I've been in this game for a minute. You know what I'm saying? But so I give my perspective on it, and they really appreciate it. I'm like, wow, this is really hardcore stuff. So my friend was going through this thing of like, oh my God, I don't know if he likes me or not. He does this, he does that. I'm like, oh my God, I'm just going to make, I ran it for 3 minutes on TikTok, not thinking anything. My date showed up. I forgot about it. Wake up the next day, 100,000 people have seen this. I'm getting DMs from around the world. I'm going to DM screenshots of these text messages like, yo, I'm in this situation with this guy. Yo, I'm in this situation with the. I'm like, what? So that made it to like 1.52 million. And I just started replying to people. And now I'm like a dating guy.
He's a dating guru.
He's a movie
director, producer, slash writer. Turns around self-hype coach.
So we're doing like a post-breakup academy with the coaching program now. So I'm like, how can we use this to serve people now? So I'm like, because I'm able to dive into the personal development aspect of heartbreak, dating, love. Because really it's like, you got to know yourself. You got to love yourself. And if all these people are telling me, yo, this guy sucks, but I keep going back to him. Let's not focus on him. Let's talk about you and why you are allowing this in your life. Let's break it down. So, because like I could tell you to leave them, but you might end up with just another one, just like them.
just like that person.
So yeah,
that's the common trend, man. They go after the same. They don't break the pattern. Like they don't understand that they have a pattern.
And there's so many different aspects of life that attribute to love, and you got to love yourself. You got to be in a good place mentally, and that's what I try to advocate. I try to throw that in there with also, this is why he's not texting you back, you know, and it kind of works out nicely. So, yeah.
I have a concept for that. So for anybody who wants love advice, I have just a one-liner. It's one of those things where it's just like, you're not meant to make someone happy. You're meant to be happy. And then you share that with someone else that you feel you want to love. That's the way I think. So, because I think that we spend so much time trying to make somebody else happy in relationships. And I don't think that that's the case. I think that two people should be happy. And when they unite, they just kind of share that happiness and kind of like it feeds off of each other. So there you go. I'm 46, single, been divorced for a really long time. I haven't dated in forever. So I don't know why I'm not taking my own advice. But
you got knowledge, man. So just say that on the first date.
I'll be like, are you happy? And she's like, nah, okay, we ain't gonna make this happen. I'm not here to entertain you. I'm not a clown.
You know, oh, I love that. You got to know your worth, man. That's beautiful sentiment. That's exactly where my mind's at as well. That's where you got to be, man, for real.
I don't even know if I said that right. I know that I've said it quite a few thousand times, and I don't know.
That was
eloquent. But I mean, the best way to think about it is, you both have to be at a happy, you know, be happy with yourselves. So that way you guys can just share that. I think it's very important not jump into something if you know that you're going to put somebody to somebody else. That's just me. That's my own advice.
That's really
all right. We're going to play a game. We just got deep. This whole interview just went like, wait, what the fuck? Bunch of therapists over here.
That was good, though. That was good.
We're going to play a game. Fast questions. Gets a little bit to know about you before we turn around and finish out here, because this has been like an awesome conversation. It's like living room talk for people who don't pay attention to our podcast. That's literally what we have. It's like round table, except better, or red table, whatever it is. We're not slapping people. All right. So let's see. Fast questions. You ready?
Let's do it.
Favorite actor?
Bill Murray. Love
Bill Murray.
Yeah.
Wow.
Since I was a teenager, And I'm going to get this tattoo now because I still want it. I don't have any tattoos. I want Bill Murray's face way up high on my inner thigh. I thought it was just a random stupid tattoo, but I just want Bill Murray's stenciled face. I'm going to get it eventually. But
okay, but why your high inner thigh?
Because it's weird. I don't know. It's a conversation starter, you know what I mean? Depending on who you're talking to, you know? So, you know, that's
usually he's wearing short shorts. Everybody's like, why is Bill Murray's chin hanging outside of your short shorts?
Exactly. Just with a beard, too. So a little bit of chin hair hanging out. But yeah. No. yeah, Bill Murray, man, he's the GOAT, dude. He's the GOAT. Like, through the beginning of his career to now, he's just, like, it's amazing. Yeah.
That is crazy. So exclusive. Be on the lookout. Paparazzi is going to be doing that when he's all right. Hyped up and stuff. Bill Murray on his inner thigh. hot coffee or iced coffee?
Hot coffee.
Hot coffee guy.
Yeah, I think the iced coffee is like too new. It's like oat milk to me. It's like, what are we
doing? But what kind of hot coffee do you drink? Is it like Dunkin' Donuts hot coffee, or do you the small cafe cubano
coffee? I don't drink a lot of coffee. If I'm going to do coffee, I'm just, I'll do just straight black coffee. I know. It's like, I don't drink coffee because I'm a coffee guy. I drink coffee because I need it.
Because you need it? Like the caffeine wake you up?
Yeah. And I'll drink it because it's like hot is like cozy. So that's, I'll drink it because it's cozy or whatever. I don't know. I think I'll drink iced coffee if it's hot out, but if I have to choose, I mean, I'm OG, so I'm going to do hot coffee. So
all right.
Yeah, I think hot coffee is where it's at.
We're going to just move on from that question. Black coffee. You come from Chicago, and you're here now, you know, you're between you going back and forth. So what is it, hot or cold weather for you?
Dude, hot weather, always. Like
hot weather? So much better, right?
Oh, my God, yeah. I hate people.
That's why I moved the hell out of New Jersey. I couldn't deal with it.
Right, dude? Yeah. Oh, my God. East Coast, hell yeah. Yeah, you guys are really going through it. Oh my God.
From like November, well now, you know, with warming and everything, but from November to like May, it's like always terrible.
Seriously. Like that's how it is in Chicago too. It's like, it'll be hard. Cause it'll be like May. Yeah. It'll be like May. And I'm like, oh yeah.
Bro, you guys are crazy. I went to boot camp in Great Lakes, Illinois. Like guys, it's intense.
Oh, it's February, like Arctic tundras.
Yeah. February and what is it? January, February, March, get the hell out. Like there's no way. Yeah.
It's miserable. It's miserable. That's why I say Chicago is the greatest city in the world in the summertime because everyone's freezing their asses off until once it melts, the whole city is out. It's alive. It's popping. It's all that. So it's like if you can make it to the city like July, August, perfect. That's the perfect time. It's the greatest city in the world. There's no more fun city.
Last song that you streamed.
Ooh, I just came from the gym. What was I listening to? Dang, what was I listening to? It was like, hell, I can pull it up right now. Actually, hold up.
I was like, he's gonna have to go to his phone.
I'm gonna have to look it up. Okay. I'm like, damn, what was it? Plain Jane, ASAP Ferg. That was like,
there you go. See,
that's what's up. So I like to get hype. I got my hardcore hip hop music, or if I'm lifting weights, I'll do like AC/DC, like. You know, Black Sabbath stuff. Like,
everybody goes that route when you're doing weights. I don't think there's any. It's either that or you go into like rap.
Yeah. It's what I have a mix. Yeah, I have a mix of that. You know, I'm a big. You watch me for motivation. I watch The Rock for motivation. So not that you wake up every morning. I can't wait to see what Eli posted. But no. But yeah, I see The Rock.
No, I wasn't stalking your account, but man, your stuff like comes off on my feed. I guess it's because of how many times I liked it or something.
Dude, my friends are so annoyed at me. It's okay. It's right there. Like,
man, I mean, I was getting to that point. I muted you. No, I'm just kidding. All right, let's see. First celebrity crush.
Oh man. have you seen? Everyone gets weirded out by this one. Have you seen Married with Children?
Yes.
The wife.
That's not odd.
Is that not odd?
That's not odd. No, I don't think that's odd.
No,
because you know we grew up with Married with Children, and she was. I mean, she was very attractive. It's not like. I mean, it's just because everybody was focusing on the daughter. Nobody cared to know that the wife was hot as hell.
Yeah, she was so hot. And then they like the husband never wanted to like cook up with her or whatever. And I was like, I'm like, come on, what are you doing? You want to get your you have? I'm like, oh, like, jeez, I don't even have pubes yet. I'm like, damn it! You know, but yeah, that, I mean, that was an odd one. That was, yeah, no, that was the first one. Yeah, I never, it's weird with me. They're like particular like loves that I have. It's like, I forgot the actress, but she's like in the Mummy movies. She's like the love interest in the Mummy movies.
Oh, yeah. I know who you're talking about. I can't remember her name.
Yeah.
Mine is hard because I have to eventually interview her and I don't want to be all awkward. So
can you say like who it is? Like what?
Selma Hayek. Yeah,
oh man. Mine. Oh yeah. Selma.
I'm gonna interview her one day and I'm just going to be like and she's gonna be like, are you okay? I'm like, just give me these 30 seconds. I will just be right back. I just need to get over this, you know,
just to stay watching you.
Yeah. She is gorgeous. That is my first celebrity crush.
That's so, a good
one. Well, actually, no, she's my celebrity crush. My very first one was Winnie from Wonder Years, if you remember.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That was a lot of people's. Yep. Yeah.
She was cute. All right. So one of the weird questions is it wrong for a vegetarian to eat animal crackers?
Oh, that's good. You know, no, I could see, I could see the problem.
The fact
with
that
it.
We're deep contemplating this shit.
That tripped me up because I was like, it depends how you eat it. Because if you're eating the head off, that's like, there's something weird going on. Because like, you know, you bite the head off or you bite the legs tail.
Or the heads
like,
or stuff.
That makes sense for me because I eat meat. You know what I mean? I like to, I'm like prey. That's my prey, you know? I'm like, but yeah.
Adriana from Latinx Therapy is going to be looking at this and she's going to be sitting there going, wait, there's some deep-seated issues
here. There's some deep-seated issues going on. I think if you're vegan, yeah, vegetarian, and you eat animal crackers, like, yeah, there's something going on. You need to go to Latinx Therapy.
Yeah,
I don't
you
know
need to. Like, there's quite a few crackers that you can be going for. I don't
know. You know, never mind. I'm going to change my opinion. That is weird. It's wrong.
It's weird. There you go. It's wrong.
It's wrong. It's not right. I don't think it's right.
That's hilarious. All right, favorite sports team.
Favorite sports team, oh, man. I the only sport I watch is UFC. So I'm gonna go with like UFC fighters. He just won Nate Diaz.
Nate Diaz, okay,
Mexican, Latino, all that. If not, I'm Chicago family. So Cubs, Bears,
Dub Bears,
Bulls,
yeah, one of those
Dub Bears, all Dub that.
Bulls.
Yeah.
All right. If your life was a song title, what would it be?
I would say, man, you know what? With these questions, you just say the first thing that pops in my head. I'm gonna say, "Keep on rocking in the free world." That's
a good song title. Damn, what?
Keep on rocking in the free. Keep on rocking in the free world. Yeah,
there you go. It, man. That's a good one.
I'm not.
These
even
were supposed to be fast questions. They were nowhere near fast because we had to talk. We had to talk. The animal crackers one has got me dying though because I'm just picturing it. It's so funny. All right, guys, dude, thank you for joining us here, man. This was actually a trip, man. If somebody wanted to follow you, where would they go?
Yeah, man. My socials all the same. It's @ It's Eli Vasquez, ITSELIVAZQEZ, all around social. Follow me on that. My IG has all my links. We have the Self-Hype podcast. We have my TikTok dating advice. We have, the Self-Hype program as well, so you can learn more about us. And I'm super laid back and chill. Like, shoot me a DM. Let's chat. Let's talk. If it's coaching, if you want to learn more about the industry or whatever it is, you know, life is short. Let's keep rocking in the free world. So, you know.
Yeah. And if you want to find out more about Eli, just make sure that if you're watching this, just go to the website. We have his entire bio. You can go, you know, directly link up to the program and be able to find out more about it. And yeah, Eli, man, it was great to have you on the show. I had a feeling this would be a great discussion. And it turned out to be that. It was really fun. I really enjoyed having you on here, man.
Yeah, dude, it was so fun. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I'm glad we were able to make it happen, dude. I really appreciate you bringing me into your space. So it means a lot.
All right, guys, thank you for watching the special interview with Eli Vasquez, part of our Revolution Hispanic Heritage 30-day extravaganza virtual event brought to you by Throw the Waffy. Be sure to follow us on all social media platforms @ Throw the Waffy and continue to be a part of the 30-day celebration that we have. The schedule is on the website. You can catch the entire schedule at www.throwthewaffy.com. I'm Rafael. That is Eli, and we are out.
Desde Nicaragua hasta Costa Rica, con esta canción todo el mundo se identifica. Llamen a los chilenos y a los cubanos, llamen a Puerto Rico y a los mexicanos, que ya se armó la rumba. Desde Panamá hasta Ecuador, vámonos a Perú y luego hasta El Salvador. Que se escuche Brasil y Argentina. Yo quiero un grito de mi gente latina y levantaré mi bandera, estando en mi país o estando allá afuera, porque para mí mira no existen fronteras.